Cobra.
And that sound means the start of yet another missile for the masses. This is the Chaplain's Assistance Mortar Pod, and this is the 60th missile of the podcast where I usually talk about a toy, vehicle, playset, or even a trailer from the G.I. Joe Real American Hero toy line from 1982 to the present day. Also, I like to read the comics and cover them as they're coming out. And with me today on this comic journey is my good friend Joel from the Order of Battle podcast. Joel, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing pretty good on this night and ready to talk some Cobra Commander number one.
Yeah, I am very excited to be on the ground floor of this whole Energon universe. When I re-jumped into buying G.I. Joe action figures, it was kind of in the middle of Larry's IDW run, so I never jumped in because I was just so far behind, you know. And I was behind on the original run, and then I was behind on the IDW run, so I kind of was just like, someday I'll jump in, and here we are.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say that's kind of sad that in today's day and age it's intimidating to jump in the middle of runs. I think that speaks volumes as to the way comics are written today versus written in the 80s when kids were, you know, finding these on the spinner racks. Joel, I know you're a little bit younger than some of us of the old guard. Were there even spinner racks
so
when you're going up?
I grew up in the middle of nowhere. So I had no comic shops. I had a KB Toys for a while that went out when every, you know, Toy Works and KB's went under. Every once in a while, I could find like multi-packs of comics at Walmart. And the closest Walmart was about 20 minutes from me. Like the town I grew up in didn't have a store. So there was no spinner racks. There was no media stands. There was no nothing. I had a handful of comics throughout my childhood. My dad and his cousin were super into comics in the 70s. So anything that was comic related, like I ate up all the 90s, you know, X-Men, Spider-Man cartoons, like Batman animated series. So anytime I could get anything that kind of tied into that, you know, I had a handful of random issues. So I didn't really get the chance to get lured in by a spinner rack because there was just nothing around.
Hey, you know, some people do grow up like they're outback living in the wilderness. Here, kid, no comics, but here's some lead and go hunt yourself up some dinner.
It's not that far off.
So this is the Chaplain's Assistance Mortar Pod. And I do focus on the vehicles, playsets, and trailers. Do you have a favorite or flavor of the moment vehicle, playset, or trailer that is, you know, your favorite?
I love the Pursuit of Cobra Vamp. It's like the super vamp. It's got four seats, but it can hold like eight figures, and it's got the stand-in gun in the back. That is kind of always a favorite of mine. There is a very weird middle era submarine that has got reissued a couple times in the modern era that I also like. I don't really remember what they call it because the club used it twice, once in the Iron Grenadier faction and once with the Adventure Team. It's got like a claw in the front. It looks like a stingray.
Okay.
I know you've seen it. It got a bunch of releases in the middle of years, but I have some weird...
Is it that weird black and yellow one from the Big Shoulders era?
The thing is, I don't know what color it was in the middle era. I only know it from the club's reissues.
Oh, man. And I don't want to bore our readers or edit out us looking it up on Yojo.
I would say probably that vamp, though.
That's a good choice.
Vehicles.
You can't go wrong with a vamp. Yeah, the modern era vamp I really liked. I really liked when they added the shovels and stuff to it. And I know the Super Vamp that you're talking about. It is a solid, desert vehicle or just troop vehicle. It's a good choice. I was really expecting you to say Tiger Hawk.
You know, it's funny because I flipped back and I think I'm over it. I don't think I will hunt it down. I think, maybe I'll find someone to paint up one of the modern era ones I have, because it would probably be cheaper than hunting that thing down. So I think I just kind of got swept up in the moment with that, with a Tiger Hawk. And I think I'm truly over it because it's kind of preposterous.
We all have budgets apparently. So back to the comics. So Cobra Commander number one. So it was released January 17th. And I went to the shop on a Wednesday. I know you went on Sunday.
Yes.
How many covers did you get? Just curious to see how much of a cover collector you are.
Just the one. Okay. Whatever they pull me is what I get. I think I have the common one. It's the Cobra Commander standing in like the fog. There's snakes. There's what looks to be the Ark, I think, flying over his shoulder.
Yep. And I'm looking at it right now. That would be cover A by Andrea Milani and Annalise Leone. Those are the artist and the colorist from the interior of the book. It's a solid image, you know, a lot of green. The Ark and, you know, the night sky gives it that ethereal, you know, cosmic quality to it. There's also the moon behind the Cobra sigil. You know, you kind of see about a quarter of it. And then, you know, Cobra Commander's holding his pistol in his right hand. And as he's walking up, there's snakes on the ground. And I just think of, like, you know, Indiana Jones. Why did there have to be snakes?
It's a striking cover. I mean, I mean, once we get into it, I'm really enjoying this version of Cobra Commander. There's kind of like combinations of different versions that we've seen in the past from, you know, different media. But the cover is, yeah, I mean, he looks pretty badass right off, you know?
Yeah, it looks badass. It looks evil, but it also gives it what Josh Williamson described as more of a horror aesthetic. And I'm definitely getting like some 1980s horror vibes off that, or early 90s. With that green, you know, it's very monochromatic, except for Cobra Commander himself, who's, you know, in his blue uniform and helmet. So, yeah, you're right. It is a great cover. Obviously, I'm a Joe diehard. So this, if I saw this on the racks or on the shelf, you know, I'd pick it up. And, you know, you have the Ark there, too, which, you know, if you're a fan of Hasbro properties, you know, then you'd be also clued into the fact that there might be a Transformers connection in this book as well.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, I'm not much of a Transformers guy, but I mean, the Ark is the Ark, you know, like it's a giant. I like the giant toys, so, you know, I guess I pay attention to those.
Well, it isn't no Cobra mothership. We'll just put it at that. So then I just want to talk about a couple other covers that I did pick up at my comic shop. I generally, when I go out and I buy comics, I try to get all the covers that they have available that day. I'm not going to go online and hunt down exclusives or ratio incentives, because unless it's a true standout and Duke and Cobra Commander both had one each done by David Mack, who did a spectacular run on Daredevil, and those are just out of my price range because they're one in 250 variants. But I want to start with cover B, and it's by David Aja. So it's kind of a reductionist image that Aja is kind of known for, a little more back to basics, very heavy inks. It's Cobra Commander posed, left hand on his hip, his right hand on his pistol. holding it in the air. That's good. That's showing good trigger discipline and good, you know, range discipline, making sure the barrel's always pointed in a safe direction. And, but he's also, it's essentially a white background with some machinery behind him, so or lab equipment. And to the left, there is a little bit of that, you know, Kirby crackle for like the energy and the, you know, the machines are being on, you know, they're doing something.
I mean, that looks super 80s to me in the best way possible. Like the way it's colored, I guess. I don't know the technical terms, but to me that looks like it could easily have been a cover from the 1980s.
Yeah, I could go with that. It's very similar. David Aja, one of his best known works is he did a run on Hawkeye. His style is very similar for the past, you know, 10 years or so. So it is recognizable as a David Aja, but it's a good one. I'm happy I have it as a cover B. I am going to admit I really think that the A cover is better though with this. So the next one, I'm not going to show you, but there is a blank cover. So you can buy the blank cover and have your favorite artist or, you know, person, you know, put their own cover on it. So it's just a blank white cover, nothing to talk about there, folks. And then the other one, I got two more. This is the 1-in-10 ratio cover. The 1-in-10 ratio is by Chris Burnham. It is a connecting cover. It's Cobra Commander standing in the snow. He has the long brim hat. And he looks a little bit like Old Snake from that third season Transformers episode. If you've read the 5-page preview of the book and many of the other Skybound titles or online, you'll recognize this uniform from that. And it's a solid image of him just standing in the snow.
I think that's probably my second favorite compared to cover A. Well, at least of what I've seen so far.
Well, there's one final one I'm going to talk about real quick, Joel, and that is the 1-in-25, which is the explosion back Cobra Commander, very evocative of the 1982 Hector Garrido or 1983 Hector Garrido portrait with his outstretched right hand, you know, trying to like reach for the world and his left hand just holding his pistol by his side.
I do always love the card back style, but I really love that last cover in the snow.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to definitely say that the one in the snow is, you know, very close. I have a hard time picking that one between that and cover A. All right. So those are the covers. They did a solid job, I think, on those. And I guess, do you have any initial impressions of the comic you want to share before we spoil the absolute heck out of the plot?
I was pleasantly surprised with how sci-fi they went. And I'm a big fan of sci-fi and Joe. So I'm very happy with the book. So I'm actually like dying for the next issue to come out at this point.
Yeah, no, that's very fair to the point. I think if you're listening to this podcast and you are, you know, trying to stay spoiler free, to reiterate what Joel said, they definitely delved into the more science fiction fantasy elements of the G.I. Joe mythos, particularly those of a certain cartoon motion picture. There are many fans that are, you know, they're little Green Army Men guys, you know, they think G.I. Joe ended at 86. And there are guys that enjoy the entire range of G.I. Joe. So for those that love the Ice Cream Soldier, he's not here in this book. But the thing is, the 90s do show up in a surprising way. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. But with that, I think it's time to, I'll go over and summarize the book and spoil the heck out of it. So So, to start off, Cobra Commander number one is written by Joshua Williamson. Andrea Milani is the artist. Annalisa Leone is the colorist. And Russ Wooten is the letterer. It is the same writer and letterer as the Duke series, with a specific art team for this book. So I'm going to say that I think Josh really gets a lot of the G.I. Joe mythos, and I think he knows how to really balance what's come before into a comic book format. Everything, you know, it's a good team. I think it's a good team up. I completely sidetracked. But let's start with the summary. All right, so the book opens at the No Man's Land Diner in the mountains, snowing. A lisping Cobra Commander, dressed like Old Snake from that third season Transformers episode, lisps his question, looking for a ride. A man leaves. He follows, murdering him, leaving a crimson cobra sigil in the snow. All right, flashback to before. Opening a double page to scenic Cobra Law. An explosion interrupts on the next page as a mob storms a science center. A scientist calls for a retreat, but he's killed by a very 1991 version 4 Cobra Commander. The mob has discovered that the scientists have used outside technology in Cobra Law's organic world. Cobra Commander prepares for a holding action in the lab, handing out organic spore weapons / grenades. One scientist holds the spore grenade too long and it explodes on everyone inside, including Cobra Commander. We are brought to an emergency room of sorts where snakes are used to heal Cobra Commander. We then have a quiet two-page sequence of him recuperating with the organic Cobra Law technology supporting him. It looks like he lost his right eye with a new yellow eye above. He looks over at a new helmet, much like what we see on the cover, and is told to wear it to hide his shame. Pythona and a pair of royal guides appear to escort him to Globulus. Globulus informs us that the commander is the only one to survive the specimen and even interrogated it. Globulus then goes on to accuse Cobra Commander of instigating the riots that the commander himself was a victim of and sentences him to death. The commander is surrounded by three royal guards and he dodges their initial attacks. He gains the upper hand by unleashing four mini robots that look like Insecticons who attack and defeat the royal guard, while the commander warns Globulus's control of using fear and hate, while also cutting off Cobra Law from the rest of the world, has led the populace to near civil war as resources dwindle. With that, he's able to manipulate Globulus for a new title and leaves Cobra Law for a special mission. We then go to the commander walking to a very large technological prison. The double page spread is of Megatron kneeling with no arms. The commander monologues how he tortured Megatron to learn about Cybertron and how he wants to bring Cobra Law to that level of advancement. And that studying Megatron, he's learned of other energy signatures similar to Megatron's and is going to track them. That sequence closes with Megatron kind of turning on, his left eye goes red. And then finally, the closing scenes, we get the commander and an unnamed Cobra in a tracked vehicle that he stole in the beginning of the book. And the last page is a three-panel sequence of the Dreadnought's shack in the swamp. So that summarizes the book. Did I miss anything, Joel?
I mean, that's a pretty good summary. I can't think of anything outside of pointing out specific panels that you missed.
No, but we'll cover that. Just wanted to make sure I did that thoroughly enough. Spoiled the heck out of it. So we're going to go into a segment where we're going to talk about our yos. Do you have any good talking points about this book? What's your first yo for the book?
My first yo, and probably my favorite segment, is when Cobra Commander, I guess before he's got the official title, as he's about to face off with the Royal Guards, and he throws the little insectoids out. And well, even before that, he shucks and jives, and it's like kind of this nice combination of, you know, the cartoon Cobra Commander is kind of like an idiot. The original comic is a little bit more of a villain, and this is kind of a blend of both in a way, I guess, in my opinion, because he like is very, you know, he, one of the lines he says is something along the lines of like, yeah, I'm not much of a fighter. I prefer to have other people do my fighting. And then he, you know, throws up the insectoids and shreds up the guards. So that's definitely my biggest yo.
Okay. Yeah. That, the characterization of Cobra Commander. And if you read the letter that Josh Williamson wrote in the back of the book, you know, he's really making Cobra Commander a leader or a strong presence. But the one thing to speak of the commander is I really like how manipulative he is. That's something we haven't really seen too much of in the cartoon at all. But in the comics, sometimes he doesn't seem like he's in control. And this, from this book, like he's definitely in control. He knows what he's doing. He's playing the chess in this game. But I also like the fact that he's a little bit physical because he was able to dodge those attacks by the Royal Guard, which was like something that normally we don't get to see the physicality of the commander. It's more of a like, you know, do this and do that and retreat. But this guy ain't retreating. You know, the first guy you see that says retreat looks like Cobra Commander from the cartoon or from the movie before, you know, the spores, you know, and he was once a man. And he's like, oh, and then he says retreat. And I'm like, oh, that's Cobra Commander. And next thing you know, boom, he gets shot. It's just like, oh my God. Nice. Yeah. And then the big reveal is, you know, before he's commander, he's dressed up in that disco Cobra Commander version uniform. And I'm just like, oh, this is awesome. This guy's pulling from everywhere.
I did love seeing that, like, very bizarre 90s Cobra Commander with the clear. I love that they even took it to the point of the, you know, the transparent face shield in the drawing.
Yeah, that was, you know, I was going to open up with a little bit of a joke, be like, you know, the most polarizing thing about this issue is, right, Joel? It's the fact that they prominently use the 1991's Cobra Commander uniform.
I honestly think it's a perfect fit for him in the science lab.
I absolutely agree. It was this book is, and I'll go into one of my yos. This book is chock full of Easter egg details. And I really have to credit Williamson because he put a bunch of that into his script. But the the art team of Milana and Leone, you know, including these things into all the panels, and to do so with, you know, making it not a focus, but like as an Easter egg, and really just it's something there to grab the old fan, the old guard, because it's definitely you know, the art is great. It's very modern, it's very animation style with heavier inks, but the you know, they're light when they need to be, but they're heavy for most part with the character's outline, so it has that animation feel. But then throwing in all those wonderful Easter eggs throughout the book, it's great. You know, Commander is dressed like Old Snake when he's outside of Cobra Law. There's a lot going on for both fans of G.I. Joe and Transformers.
It is, as much as this is a small thing, the design of the vehicle that he steals is grabbed me so hard because the actual body of the vehicle is in that weird, like, 60s, 70s, you know, super angular design that somehow was futuristic back then. And we don't have vehicles that look like that now, but it still kind of looks futuristic, even though it's retro futuristic, I guess. And I kind of like, for me, when I see that vehicle, it's like, well, I have no idea when this comic is taking place, because we don't really see, you know, in the modern, in the pages of the modern stuff, you know, we don't see much technology, because he's in the middle of nowhere at a bar looking for a ride. And then we have this like truly bizarre and amazing designed tracked semi, is it a station wagon with the back cut off? Is it, you know, it's got like a little truck bed, but it doesn't look like a truck. The truck paired with him just like, you know, blasting this dude, and the guy being like, oh, what do you have, a toy? And then all of a sudden it's just like, you know, science noises and then a scream. Yeah, I don't know, that you know, the little square drawing of that truck really just really sealed the deal for me loving this book.
Yeah, no, you know, looking at that while you're talking about it, you know, the tread pattern or the way the tracks look looks a little bit like a certain tank from 1983. And, you know, it's black.
With a red again. Stripe.
Yeah, well, the red stripe makes me think of the A-Team.
Yeah, it's an A-Team van meets a his tank meets.
Yeah, what was that? Oh, gosh. Can't think of the name. The Chevrolet Avalanche.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing I want to say is just the fact that I really like one of my biggest things is the fact that he really took a chance on this book by going out there, by using Cobra Law and the Transformers together. I think that, you know, we kind of alluded to this earlier, but the biggest dividing thing for a fan on the G.I. Joe side of the fandom is Cobra Law. But the way it works by creating friction inside of Cobra Law with using the Transformers and how it gets the commander, I don't want to say outcast, because it could also be read that way, because, you know, you have Globulus, the leader, you know, he's playing this chess game against Cobra Commander, you know, as Cobra Commander is like manipulating Globulus to get what he wants. So there's a lot of story element there between the panels of going, you know, like, I want to leave to do this mission for Cobra Law and to make Cobra Law great. I'm loyal to Cobra Law. And they really stress that connection. But I really like the fact that because they're doing this out of, you know, out of Hama continuity series, that they can really push it. You know, the Joes are part of the Transformers Energon universe. And I've made my personal peace with that over the past 2 weeks after talking to Jason about Duke number one. So I'm really happy that he's really pushed it in this world where there's 40-foot robots tromping around at the same time as, you know, the G.I. Joe team. So it makes sense. I really enjoyed when Devils Do introduced Cobra Law into the Transformers versus G.I. Joe series that they did. So I'm happy again to see it here.
I am enjoying, like, for me, seeing Cobra Law in this issue did kind of like more for me. I mean, I'm 34, so I'm young compared to most of my peers in this community. So my introduction to the brand and my introduction to a lot of this stuff is not really nostalgia driven in the same way as a lot of other people. So I didn't see, you know, the animated movie until I was well into adulthood. So I can watch it as an adult and enjoy it, and I can certainly understand, you know, how divisive the movie is, I really enjoy in this book, this tone of Cobra Law, I enjoy more than the movie, I would say. And I mean, it's one issue. So I'm hoping that, you know, the more Cobra Law backstory we get, I'm hoping it stays in the tone that they've laid out so far. But, you know, I mean, we've seen a teaser cover that clearly looks like it's Nemesis Enforcer in the shadows. So I am curious to see kind of like with them mixing in the Transformers technology, you know, because when he threw the little, you know, his spore bombs were kind of half organic, half tech. And I'm really excited to see where this like weird fusion in a super sci-fi world, like, I'm excited to see what they do with the movie style Cobra Law meets Transformers.
Yeah, agreed. I am really looking forward to this. This book is what sealed the deal to me on the Energon universe. Like, this is, now that you haven't read the Transformers book yet, and I would definitely say to any of the listeners out here, if you've gotten this far and you haven't read Transformers number 4, well, you probably should have. But and Joel will know what I'm talking about tomorrow as I'm editing this podcast and he's reading the books. But this book sealed the deal that everybody is taking this seriously, but and every book has their own flavor. Void Rivals has been an imaginative world building experience. Transformers has been a nonstop action packed series for 4 issues. And I will say, without spoiling it, you don't breathe in the Transformers books until issue 4, where you finally get a quiet moment. Duke is this Jason Bourne-esque book so far. And then finally you have this Cobra book, which is just science fiction fantasy, you know, blended. And these 4 books are really just a great mixing pot for what's turning into a huge story. And I'm absolutely now here for it.
Yeah, I am so excited for this expanded universe. I'm really dying to see when, you know, this version of this universe version of Duke crosses over into Cobra Commanders. Like, I'm curious, you know, I have speculations that would be tropes, and I'm hoping it's, you know, a little bit more than that, but this is, we're off to a great start. And I think it's a guy that, you know, I've read like the first probably 30-ish issues of the original Larry continuity. I've read very small handful of Devil's Due stuff and even less of the IDW stuff. And jumping in on this weird expanded universe, as well as Larry's 301 forward, it's really done a lot for me with staying excited about everything that's going on. Like, I'm more excited for these books than probably anything else that's currently going on, even in the toy sector. So
wow, that's, yeah. And as toy collectors, yeah, that's, and I think to reiterate something I probably said before, these books get me excited for new toys, like the Mole Rats. Those are directly linked to the Energon universe. I'm excited to see what other characters pop up in these books. So then I could be like that guy, be like, hi, my son really likes G.I. Joe Classified. Does anybody have them for a really good deal? After I've gotten out of Classified, I'm buying them again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I will say this. I think that if a character shows up in design and is good enough in this book, it'll make me want the figure. And I'm like, you know, I've kind of been treading water with Classified with my level of excitement for the scale. So I can see myself exactly what you just said, like, you know, some design pops up in this book and all of a sudden I'm like, well, damn, I absolutely need that action figure, even though I'm like, you know, kind of over it.
Yeah, no, it's like you said, it's an exciting time. Now, I'm going to ask if it's, I know this might be pulling teeth for this book, but do you have any detractors and no, perchance, for this book?
I would say maybe the only thing I have is, instead of those huge pages of just like overviews and scenes, like maybe if we could have seen some more of the inner workings of, you know, Globulus's throne room or whatever. Just like, I want to see more personnel, I guess. I want to see kind of more of Pythona. Even if it was just her, you know, with other guards, like, I just want to see more of the tech of the organic tech side of things, like within the buildings, not just like, you know, cause there's the big, where they, it's almost like, you know, a pan back with a camera and you're just kind of looking out into, like, I guess the nature of Cobra Law. I just wish it was more building stuff, or, you know, more of the quote unquote urban environment in this realm.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Actually, to tag my one note that I had for this book was the final page. It's the final page, and it's just a three panel of getting closer to the shack in the swamp. And I didn't think that Cobra Commander going to Florida to see the Dreadnoks needed that much focus or impact for that. I appreciated when we opened up to Cobra Law, when we get to before, and you have that big worldview, that big, you know, it's meant to grab you and to realize we're not wherever we just were. We are in, you know, in a completely different environment. I really enjoyed that aspect of the storytelling, but that final page to me was just like, I don't want to say it was wasted, but like you said, they could have moved something around a little bit to maybe give you a little bit more in the middle, a little more Cobra Law, like you said, inner workings or what's going on. So I really think Williamson's really trying to balance the fine line between individual issue and trade paperback. And that was just like, that's my only detractor for this book is that final page.
I think that's very fair. I mean, I tend to think as a whole in the past chunk of, you know, the tail end of the 50th anniversary into what we're currently at, I think sometimes the subgroups get a little bit heavy handed. And this has nothing to do with comics. This, cause I, you know, I don't have a lot to say about the past comics cause I'm not current. I think as a whole, like as a brand, I think sometimes like, it gets a bit stale for me sometimes when it's just, you know, here we're really into the Dreadnoks, so this is all we're getting. And this is, you know, it's kind of old, it's kind of new, but it's somewhere in between. And it's like, well, are they 80s guys or are they current guys you'd see at the grocery store now with an eccentric beard? I don't know, you know. So I'm
the Dreadnoks are gone hipster.
I mean, without getting too negative, there's several design elements that we've gotten in the past couple waves of figures where I'm like, they're really torn and they're stuck between, like, we're throwing a lot of the nods to the 80s, but then that's also weirdly modern. And I'm like, just pick one, just do one, please. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but, to go to that same thing, you mentioned a great cartoon from the late 80s, early 90s, that balanced that timeless aesthetic. And that was Batman.
Yeah.
The animated series. You can't, you know, they're talking on essentially cell phones and doing all this other stuff. And then everything is Art Deco. And it was just an absolute, you know, melding of modern and vintage in that book, in that cartoon, that works. And it holds up even today.
I was actually was rewatching the first season, and I it's crazy because I wanted to wrap it in with what I was saying about the vehicle that I like so much. And then I just said kind of was, you know, whatever, distracted, but exactly what you just said. It's like Batman's on a cell phone or a video call. And then he walks out to like a 1920s car, and it's awesome. And it makes it this weird own universe. And that, I think that this book does that perfectly, where it's like, I don't know what the hell is going on. I don't know when, I don't know where, I don't know anything, but I'm enjoying what I'm reading.
So with that, I think maybe we are at the rating portion for this book. Would you say so? Do you have anything to add? I think we've covered everything pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, if anything else, I'll just be rambling and repeating myself, which I tend to do a bit.
No problem. So I think, so if you've listened to the Chaplain Sisters Mortar Pod before, you know we rate things on a scale of 0 to 5, with half scale and quarter scale being available. And each thing I review always has its own unique scale. So I think Cobra Commander number 1 should be rated on a scale of 0 to 5 spore grenades. So, Joel, you're the guest. Out of 0 to 5 spore grenades, what do you give it?
4.75.
Ooh, 4.75. What keeps it from being perfect?
You know what? Let's give it a 5. I always feel weird giving something a 5, but I've read this book 3 times. The rest of them I've read once. And I really love Duke. Like, I thought Duke was an awesome book, and that's a conversation for another time. But, I'll bump it up to a 5 because I'm the most excited to see. Now, I'm going to say this. I hope they don't ruin it with too much Dreadnought. I love the Dreadnoughts. No hate towards the Dreadnoughts. I love them. But they're a very strong flavor. And if you mix in too much of that strong flavor, it overtakes everything. So I'm hoping it's a perfect blend. I hope it can maintain. I hope issue 2 is also a 5.
Well, I have to echo your sentiment and give this a full 5 spore grenades as well. I think this is a terrific book. It hooked me. It did exactly what it was intended to do. I'm excited. Minor quibbles aside, this is a great comic, and I'm glad I picked it up. I'm glad I read it.
Yeah. I there's nothing else I could say, really.
Yeah. Well, this is the point. Joel, thanks for coming on. Can you give out your details? So let everybody know where to find yourself and order a battle pod.
Yeah. So I, first off, thanks for having me. I was happy we could make the schedules line up and make this happen. You know, obviously I'm half of the Order of Battle podcast. If you'd like to chat with me, search for the Order of Battle on Instagram, and I'll do my best to get back to you. I've tried to be pretty good about it. Past few weeks have been a bit hectic with work, but I'm going to make it a point to check more. So if anybody wants to, you know, tell me I'm an idiot because they hate the book or whatever, you can find me there.
All right. And as always, I have been your host, Gary, and this has been the Chaplain Sisters Mortar Pod. And you can find us wherever you find your podcasts, available on most major podcasting platforms. If you're listening on Spotify or host, there will probably be a question and poll accompanying the show. So if you respond to that, I do read every single one. I will eventually talk to them when I do another solo episode. But Cobra Commander 1 was just something I just had to cover. Reasonably timely. Leave it at that. I know. For more Chaplain Sisters Mortar Pod, you can find me on social media at Chaplain Joe Pod on X, formerly Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, Threads. Trying to post all of that. Try to do a little bit of what's going on in my life of collecting. You can also reach out to chaplainjoepod@gmail.com if you just rather write an email, or if you'd like to support the show, you can send an email. And I do have t-shirts, Chaplain Sisters Mortar Pod t-shirts available. That helps things going here. And also they're made by my fine friends at Robert Barron's Inc. Now, the Chaplain Sisters Mortar Pod is a strange, but not estranged, nerdy little Cobra Law from The Pint, a pop culture podcast. I say that only because they're holding spore grenades over my head as I record. With all of that out of the way, one final missile for the masses. Be decent to each other. Have a good night.